Kaylin Huntress helps entrepreneurs to get their message out into the world. For people with a broken marketing message, he helps translate chaos into consistency. Got his background in designing WordPress websites, but now he focuses on the strategy of helping people know exactly what actions they need to take to have a successful business. He shares with me what he's learned over the years and how we've moved away from volume of content, but now we're focused on the changes that solid SEO brings. We've moved away from who's the most popular, and now we search for who we trust the most. Now is definitely the time where micro actions can have macro results. Find out more about Kaylin and get a handle on your marketing by going to marketingautomationplanner.com. Let's jump in now. We'll just hit the old record button so we don't miss any more of this wisdom. Kaylin and I were just talking a little bit about like marketing and stuff and videos, and I'm like, well, that's a pretty cool takeaway. Have a good background. And in his case, you've got a headboard behind you, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, it's good to meet you, sir. I'm glad to have gotten you on the schedule. I checked out your website, and I'm like, I got to talk with this guy because I know he knows some stuff about marketing. So conveniently enough, you're on the marketing podcast. So tell me a little bit about what your company does. Like, what's your company do? Let's start there.
Sure. Well, my name's Kaylin Huntress. My company's called Stellar Platforms, mm-hmm. and I work with experts and entrepreneurs, helping them bring their message out to the world.
Okay. Very, very cool. So what is it that commonly entrepreneurs are going to come to you about, you know, if they say, man, I really need to get the word out about what I'm doing, you know, how do you help people?
I typically help people who have broken marketing systems.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the people that I work with are authors, coaches, and speakers. And, you know, they have a message that they want to get out to the world, but their systems are holding them back. And so what I do is I come in and I do an audit of their systems. If I need to redesign the website or set up an email funnel or do Facebook ads or whatever, you know, I help translate that message into attention and then convert that attention into revenue.
Okay. Very cool. You know, that's something I know early on in my career as a solopreneur. I mean, I've got lots of help now. So you got here as fast as you could, but I'm not in your target market, unfortunately. That was something I really, really struggled with because it's like we got to wear all these different hats. And then at the end of the day, we realize, okay, I need to get the word out and just have a consistent brand message. And that's something I know a lot of people struggle with. There could probably be like 100 of you and there would still be no end to the work. You know what I mean?
Man. Yeah. Well, it's easy to spin your wheels on doing the wrong thing.
Right.
And this is something that I see people doing a lot is they think, well, I got to blog every week, even though I hate blogging, or I'm supposed to be on YouTube, or I should be doing a podcast. And there's a whole lot of people shoulding themselves, you know, thinking I should be doing all these things, but they don't really know if it's going to have a tangible effect on their business. They're just hearing all of this stale marketing advice from people who are saying these are what you should do, but they don't really bring up the metrics to back it up, or they don't explain why it's important. And what I think that entrepreneurs have a struggle with is discerning what's important for me to do and what would be a waste of my time. And they often look to marketers to provide that distinction. But as marketers, because we can do a whole lot of different things, if somebody says, well, I want to do a podcast, it's like, well, yeah, I can help you get the podcast hosting set up and design the graphics and do all that. Sure, we can do that. And so it's our tendency to go for the work and to acknowledge that this is what the client wants. So this is what I'm going to do. And it takes, you know, a lot of courage to push back on a client and say, is this really the right thing for you to be doing? Is this going to get you the business results that you want? And if you can provide respectful pushback on your clients so that they get results on the work that they do with you, then they'll be your clients for a while because they're getting results. The trap that we fall into as marketers is that we do what a client asks us to do without applying the strategic thinking to determine, is this really the right thing? Because often the client doesn't know. That's why they hire a marketer, is they need somebody who has the experience and the intelligence to tell them whether or not it's a good idea.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, you're also pushing back against that FOMO, that fear of missing out, which I'm sure a lot of business owners run into where they're like, oh my goodness, I got to be doing all this stuff. And it's like, hold up, you actually can be brave and only do exactly the things that you have to do, and then you're done. And it's hard because, especially in the US, it's like we've got this massive push toward work, 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 fast, fast, push, push, push. And it's like, all right, well, like you said before, you may just be spinning your wheels. If you don't have that metric, that measure of how successful you're being, then you're wasting your energy. So you help mm-hmm. people with that. You help people with that?
I do a lot more strategy okay. than implementation. You know, when I started, I was a web designer. And I made WordPress websites. Okay. And then I got, because I have a lot of experience in writing, when I was in college, I put myself through school by selling my ideas AP style. And I did a lot of magazine publication. And so that gave me the craft of copywriting. And so I started transitioning more into email. And I did a lot of email campaigns. And then, you know, because I had web design and email, I naturally started falling into building sales funnels. And I did that for a number of years, you know, making landing pages and membership access portals and things like that. But then I found that I was spending a lot of time doing work that didn't get results, because I was tapping into FOMO. And the clients would say, well, you know, I need to have this sales funnel pushing my new product. And, you know, can you audit my body of work and take, you know, create a course out of it that we can sell online? And because I was hungry and I wanted the work, I said, sure, let's do it. And then I started noticing that I could make these great, beautiful sales pages and membership pages that didn't get results. And so I took a step back and said, what do my clients really need here? And I started doing more strategic work, where instead of actually just making the things that they asked me to make, I was doing more of a, I was serving more of a coaching role and asking them, what's the goal that you want to get out of this? And is this the right way to get there? And often it wasn't. Often we needed to realign the marketing plan to meet the business goals. And that usually meant a complete change in how people thought about their marketing.
Okay. That makes total sense. And it's cool because you've basically, maybe intentionally or unintentionally, I'm not sure yet, but you've kind of built in almost a lead magnet. You know, when people are experiencing some kind of a pain and they're like, it kind of centers around marketing, Kaylin, come help, right? Then that indicates, all right, you've got a problem, but let's make sure we've got the right solution. Otherwise, you may be putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. And that's the last thing they need. So that's mm-hmm. really neat. I'm curious. So, I mean, it seems like you've been in the marketing game for a bit. So how has marketing changed since you started? Like some notable things that you've noticed over the last few years?
Well, the biggest change that I've noticed is a decrease in the emphasis on volume. Mm. You know, 5, 10 years ago, it was more like 10 to 15 years ago, it was really important how often you published and how long your posts were and where you ranked in the search engines. And you had to be producing a volume of content. And so that's what a lot of people came to me for, is I need to take these ideas and put it into 3 newsletters a week and 10 blog posts a month and whatever. And so like I could syndicate content and make all that. And the volume of content was an important indicator of how much web traffic you got. And then from there, how many sales you made. And it was sort of like, that was the streams. You produced content, you got traffic, and then you made sales. But then the SEO game changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that it did, because the SEO industry was being gamed by some really intelligent programmers who found the soft spots in the algorithm and said, okay, if we want to get on the top of the search engine rankings, then we need to do these things. And it didn't matter if it was any good. And so people stopped trusting the volume of content, and they started really paying attention to niches. And the transition that I've seen is going away from, you know, who's the most popular to who's the person that I trust. A lot of times customers don't trust big brands nowadays. They trust people who are experts in the field where they want to learn something. If you want to know how to change a tire, you go onto YouTube and do a search, and you're going to trust that guy who's there in his garage changing a tire with low production value a lot more than you're going to trust AAA with their branded video that has all these inserts for ads for why you should buy AAA. People trust people more. And that's the biggest change that I've seen.
A huge change, you know, and I see that crop up a lot on social media as well. It seems like the algorithms that come into play used to be back in the Wild West days, like a few years ago. LinkedIn's a great example of this, where, you know, you'll write something and it just ends up going viral. And it's like, what did I do? Like, what the heck just happened? Right. And then when they refined that algorithm, I've started telling people, I'm like, hey, trust the algorithm. Okay. Every platform is always going to look out for itself. They want to keep as many eyeballs engaged on it as possible. So whatever it is that keeps people engaged, that's what keeps them around. And just like you said, people will buy from those that they know, like, and trust. And if what you're doing content-wise builds those three factors, you're going to win. You're going to win 100% of the time. And it sounds like it doesn't take a whole lot of content, as long as it's just targeted, it solves a particular problem, and people know about you, then the rest just falls into place. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I'm curious.
Hi, I'm Bob Musial, and I was a guest of Fritz on his Elite Marketing Tips podcast. To say I enjoyed his relaxed manner and his insights would be an understatement. I especially appreciated how he related his personal experiences with my comments about the revenue-generating benefits of communicating credibility, trust, and real ROI value. When he asked me how I got into marketing, because I've been around a while, I was afraid we'd run out of time. But we were able to talk about several marketing tips, like how to stand out in the overloaded world of the internet by focusing on communication, collaboration, and common sense, and the importance of slowing down in order to speed things up, to listen and to learn. Like I said, it was a really enjoyable experience.
You know, what do you wish that someone had told you about marketing 5 years ago? I mean, you don't seem to be the type of guy that lives life with regrets. Like, you know, you're not going to should yourself on the show. Like, I should have learned this. But, you know, 5 years ago, if somebody could have told you something that would have been game changing, what would that have been?
Spend more time talking to customers.
Okay.
A lot of the market intelligence that I was using was based on what my clients thought about their market and what I could glean by basic web research. But I always found more insightful revelations when I would get on the phone and talk to customers, when I would ask them specific questions, because what they think their problems are very different than what we think the problems are. Mm-hmm. As experts, we tend to look at things through a certain lens and we use a certain type of vocabulary. But beginners or people who are facing a problem, they don't have that vocabulary and they can't articulate the problems the same way. When you're driving down the street, you know, and you see a billboard for an auto shop, it doesn't talk to you about the airflow in the catalytic converter. There's a photo of a car that's got a scrunched front end. And that's the problem. Or it'll be a headline like, you know, does your car go chug, chug, chug? Yeah. Because as a non-expert, like, that's how we can verbalize our problem. Mm-hmm. And I find that talking to customers about the problem, it reminds you of that beginner's language that they're going to respond to more.
Okay. So I play around a lot in the technology space, and I cannot tell you how many times I have run into people that, you know, they're kind of bridging the gap between engineer and customer representative, right? And they'll get on the phone, they'll get in an email or a Zoom call, and they will just go down this geeky rabbit trail. And it's weird, because then in my own mind, I hear that and I'm like, I totally get what this guy's saying, but I'm cringing because, like, I'm looking at what the person is listening to, and I can see the understanding just leave, like
the eyes glaze over. Yeah. And they're out.
Exactly. And they're like, I can't bring up my email and check my stuff or get on Reddit because they're going to see the reflection in my glasses. I got to sit here and suffer through this, right? And then they're just talking. But, you know, getting on that lower level, and not to say like, hey, you got to dumb it down for people, but you got to speak their language. You know, they got a bajillion other things on their mind. And they don't have that deep knowledge like what you have about stuff. So, yeah, that is really,
there's a really great blog post that was just published today by Rand Fishkin at SparkToro. Mm-hmm. And it's about the difference between beginner's language and expert language. Okay. And how finding an amplifier is actually more effective than writing to beginners, because, you know, getting the amplifiers interested in your content and sharing it with their audiences, that's going to get you a lot more impact. That's going to get you a lot more distribution than writing for a beginner's audience. And so it was a really thoughtful dissection of the difficulties that we face with content marketing, where we can either just try and write for a totally beginner audience, or, you know, fall on our faces and write for a total expertise audience. But there's this other option that he uncovered that I find very interesting, which is writing for amplifiers, for people who have podcasts and have YouTube shows and audiences of beginners, and actually cultivating a network of those amplifiers can be more effective for distributing your content.
Hmm. Interesting. I think I'm getting an idea for the name of this particular podcast, this episode. I think I'm going to call it Micro Actions, Macro Results. And it seems like there's a recurrent theme. You seem to be the kind of guy who would practice martial arts and figure out, like, what's the best place to, like, hit this person with the least amount of energy and just boom, done. Are you a karate guy? I wonder.
I'm a pacifist, okay. But I was an acrobat in the circus for a number of years. Yeah, I juggle flaming torches. I do backflips for fun. And training for those sorts of tricks, it requires an intense examination of the tiny modulations of effort. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to juggle, you know, five balls and you're going to send them way up into the sky, if you're off just by a tiny degree, it magnifies the effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at my work that way, and I try and find those tiny changes that can have a big impact.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that. It ends up saving us a lot of energy, you know, when you operate that way. And it takes so much bravery because, like I said before, it's like we've just had this drilled into our head. More effort means more results. And it's like, no, not always. I mean, there are people out there that work, you know, 4-hour work week, and they get more done than anybody in corporate America, right? And
yeah,
you know, just having the ability to say, all right, be totally in tune with your surroundings, know exactly what your strengths and weaknesses are, work within those limitations, and make a huge impact. I love that. I think you and I would get along great outside of this podcast. I would bowl with you. I would go bowling with you.
Marketers usually get along. Yeah,
I know, right? Yeah,
There's this great book called Power Versus Force by Dr. David Dawkins. And he talks about the difference between force, which is when you exert energy to make something happen, and power, which is when you hold energy and you attract things to you. It's a very Taoist perspective. Right. And I left the United States 10 years ago, but I carried that work ethic with me. And I find myself continually struggling against that programming that I need to work harder if I'm going to get more results. But what I sometimes find is that when I take downtime in the middle of a day, I practice Qigong a lot, which is a movement, stretching, breathing kind of practice. And it's for working at home. It's great because I can just stand up and do some movements and some breathing, and I feel great. And when I do these breaks throughout the day, sometimes I get profound ideas that dramatically impact my business. And so I always keep a notebook nearby when I'm doing this. And sometimes what I do in that 20-minute break has a bigger impact on my business than 6 solid hours of work. So we don't need to force it if we can find a place to stay in our power.
Okay. Excellent. I need to incorporate more of that in my own life. I mean, you know, I'll spend time early in the morning first thing, you know, I'll do Bible study, I'll have some quiet time, and that really sets the tone for the rest of the day. And I can feel it in my chest if I don't spend time first thing in the morning just focusing and being like, all right, what are the constraints for the day? What do I have to do? What am I stressed out about? And just isolate that and say, all right, let's go get it done, dude. And I hear you. It's awesome.
But even that language, though, what are the constraints for the day?
Yeah.
Like, as Americans, we need to reframe this idea, because we could also say, what are the possibilities for the day?
Hey, I like that better. I like that better than, I didn't even think about that. And I'm just like, constraints. And it's like, normally, I want possibilities to be the knee-jerk language that I think of, because there are lots of possibilities. There's a bajillion ways to help people, you know?
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Amazing. You're a chill guy. I like talking with you. This is fun.
Thanks, man. I've enjoyed this conversation too.
And we get to do it again tomorrow on the other show. That's awesome. Awesome. Well, so I guess the final question I've got is, you know, what is a really excellent tip? Like, if you had a room full of junior marketers, people that were like, I guess I'm a marketer now, like, what would you share with them to influence their careers for like the rest of their lives?
What I would say is, in the second email of an email sequence, put a survey.
Okay.
After somebody subscribes, you know, they're interested in hearing about what you have to say, and they'll reciprocate if you ask. And so I use a lot of templates. And so when a client says, hey, I need a, you know, my emails set up, I bring out a Google Doc and replicate it and start working on here's what your first five emails are going to say. Mm-hmm. And the second one, I always include a survey. It's either a one question survey where I ask them to hit reply. And that one question is, what's the biggest challenge with this topic, whatever the topic of the newsletter is? And getting that market intelligence regularly and automated, it keeps your finger on the pulse mm-hmm. of the market. What I prefer to do is, instead of asking for, you know, a reply to one question, is give them a link to like a Google form or you know, SurveyMonkey or something, and mm-hmm. have them do a little bit more in depth so I can get some demographic data. But it's still, it always starts with that first question. What's the biggest challenge that you face with this? And so that's the sort of thing that I have in my templates. I have the templates that I use are at marketingautomationplanner.com. It's the MAP, the MAP. The Marketing Automation Planner is the series from the opt-in page to the thank you page to the welcome sequence. And I lay out all the templates and do like some tutorials on how to set them all together.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that makes for a really good call to action for wrapping up this show. So marketingautomationplanner.com, all one word?
All one word. That's right.
Excellent. It's pretty cool. Does exactly what it says on the label. So, well, I hope this is something that draws some attention your way and brings you in some more business, because you know your stuff. You know your stuff.
Hey, thanks. Well, it's been great talking with you today.
Anytime. It's been fun. Well, we'll wrap up for the day. And I look forward to getting this pushed up pretty soon. I'll get you an email that says, hey, here's when it's going to go live. It's going to be very soon. I push them up the first of every month. So that's when it's going to go live. And I think I might have some extra goodies for you. I'm working on something, but I don't want to ruin the surprise. Okay.
Sounds great.
All right, man. Well, take care and have a good rest of the day. All right.
Hey, thanks. Now, I have us on the calendar for tomorrow, but I thought this was a mistake booking. So I'm double booked. I'm only going to be able to do this conversation. You have two podcasts. Is that right?
I've got four podcasts, actually.
Jeez,
know about two. I don't do anything in moderation. Four kids, four podcasts. So every time we have a kid, I make a new podcast. I'm joking. like, hey, it's a boy. Mazel tov. Let's do another podcast. But yeah, I've got this one. I've got one for entrepreneurship. I got one about mindset, and I've got another one that's for podcasters. I have a bunch of hosts or fellow hosts on and shoot the bull for a bit, find out about their show and be like, dang, now I got to listen to that show. I got a lot of shows I got to listen to. So yeah.
Let me ask you, does having four podcasts work four times as well as having one podcast?
It really does. Because there's, it might seem like it's really extra, like there's a lot more going on, but each one really opens the door to have totally different conversations, reach a different target group of people. And it's been an amazing way to build a network and also find some business. There's almost always either I can introduce them to somebody, or they introduce me to somebody, or they have a need themselves, or they can put us in touch with someone that they know that has a need that we solve. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, I started getting a taste of that with the first podcast. I started it back in like July of 2019. And I started getting some people interested in what we were doing. And I said, I think there's something to this, you know, and I started up this marketing one. I started up the other two. And it's resulting in some amazing conversations. So I'm not going to say, yeah, it's like eight times better, you know, and if I had five podcasts, it'd be 16 times better. Right. But there definitely is some merit to this. If you ever thought about starting a podcast, man, I would love to help you get going on that, but only if you don't feel like you should do it, you know, don't should yourself. But
yeah, I'm waiting until my book's published. I've got to I finished my book manuscript in December. Last year, and so it's sitting with the editor right now, and I'm moving down to the South Island in a couple of months. So I'm kind of tied up with a lot of different things. But later this year, after I launch my book, I'll be doing a podcast then.
Oh, nice. Well, excellent. Well, I'll take a note to myself that you're an interested podcast host. I might have some free tips and tricks to share with you, like you shared with me today.
Sure. Sounds fun.
Awesome, man. Well, I'll let you bounce, and then I'll get things tied up on my end and get the episode up before you know it. Okay?
Great. Thanks. It was great talking with you.
Same here.
Have fun out there.
Yeah, thank you, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, listener. Hopefully you learned something really cool in this episode. Marketing is a big, big area and can seem overwhelming, but hearing from experts like today's guest helps demystify it. If you learned something, consider telling your friends about the Elite Marketing Tips podcast here on anchor.fm or anywhere you consume podcasts. We appreciate your listenership.